Today is a very nice topic, the play of mind. I won't spend too much time on what Swamiji has done. You're welcome to read it on your own. But just some additional ideas that came to me. So it says that religion is not only faith. People think religion is faith. You believe in God, or you believe in the prophet, or you believe in the scriptures. But is faith accompanied by knowledge? So it's a science. It's an art and it's a science. That's why this path of spirituality is both an art and a science. Science because everything is clearly laid down. If you read the scriptures, you read the Upanishads, how scientifically they have explained everything, even the Bhagavad Gita that we are doing on Wednesday nights currently. Very clearly the teacher explains why we should do what we should do. Then he gives the choices. If you do this, you will get this. If you do that, there is nowhere thou shalt do it or thou shalt go to hell. That idea really does not appeal to most people, and that's why I find Vedanta to be very, very interesting and very practical and very scientific and precise. There is no wavering, and that's why I personally feel that one should pick one path that one likes and then go deep into it rather than going a little bit here, a little bit there. And once your knowledge is firm, then only one, as long as there is ignorance, you cannot remove the vasanas, you cannot remove the negativity. So knowledge is first, and only with knowledge you can purify your heart. And for knowledge, obviously the scriptures and the guru, a teacher, is very essential. Talking about teacher reminds me of a story. I told it yesterday, but none of you were here except Tony, so I cannot repeat it. Tony, I know, will get bored, but there was this man and his wife found a cat. Either she bought it or got it from a friend, and she loved the cat to death. The cat would sleep with them, and always she would spend time with the cat. And he somehow, A, didn't like animals much, and then he resented that my wife is spending so much time with the cat. So he said, I somehow need to get rid of this cat. I'm just tired of it. So one day his wife was going to be gone most of the day shopping, a lot of errands to run. So he said, that's a great opportunity. So he gets in the car, puts the cat in the car with him, and goes about 2, 3, 4 blocks, from his house. He said, this is far enough. Cat will probably go to somebody else's house. He leaves the cat and drives back. And by the time he gets home, the cat is smiling, meowing, and looking at him. He's like, how did she get back so fast? I need to do something more. So he drives a mile off from the house, a mile. There's no way the cat will find her way back. And he drives, and she's there. She must have ESP, and he's like, how did this cat come back? How did she know? By now he's totally irritated. He's like, there is no way I want this cat. So he takes off as fast as he can, goes through the whole city, goes out of the city, goes to the countryside, goes through some forest, type areas, goes through that, goes to the mountains, and there he makes right turn, left turn, right turn, left, driving like an absolute maniac. And finally he says, now the cat definitely won't. Drops the cat. And this was before the days of GPS and cell phones. And now he can't find his way back because he doesn't know where all he made the turn. His anger was so profound. And he's trying to find his way and looking and trying to remember. But his mind was on getting as far away from the house. So somehow, going through the highway, he finds one of those phones, that they have on the highways, that nowadays, of course, they are not there, but we used to have them where you can pick up and call the operator. And so he picks it up and tells the operator, ma'am, I'm completely lost, but can you connect me to my house? This is my number. You'll do me a big favor. So she connects him to his house. And his wife picks up the phone and he says, "Is the cat home?" She says, "Yeah, she is. Why are you asking?" "She's home. Why are you asking?" He says, "Can you give the phone to the cat so I need direction?" So he found a guru in the cat. So similarly, you and I are lost in this world. And we don't have the right knowledge of how to get out of this confusion, you know, that we have. And we have put ourselves in it. Our vasanas and our karmas are our own doing. It's not somebody else who has created these problems for us. We create our problems, then we are lost. We don't know how to get out. And that's why you need a guru, you need a teacher who can give you the right knowledge. He found the cat. But we are fortunate, we have the scriptures and we have gurus to give us this knowledge. Another very beautiful point I got from this story, which is connected with this topic which we'll come to, is that whatever irritates you the most, or whatever bothers you, or whatever you don't like, whether it's a person or a situation, is there for my growth. And until I learn from that, the lesson will keep on repeating. Nowadays, of course, they don't do that, but in India, if you haven't passed third grade, you don't have the marks, they will not promote you. Here, of course, they keep promoting everybody. But there, unless you have passed the exam. So similarly, in spirituality, there is no shortcut. Nobody gets promoted. You have to pass the exam, and then only you can go to the next step. And spirituality is as scientific as studying, you know, learning mathematics or physics or chemistry or biology. So whatever situation, and unless you learn from it, it will keep repeating. And that's what happens to him. Until he learns to respect and love the cat keeps coming and bothering him. So in life also, we are here to learn. This is a school, and that is the purpose. And if something irritates you or bothers you, you should know that this is meant for my, because in the universe will not bring you anything that is not necessary for you to grow. Even if it is something that you think is bad, it is meant for my evolution. It's meant for my growth. Once you take that, then all situations you can learn from, even the most unpleasant, where I'm very sick or hurting or emotionally or physically. So there's no mistakes in his creation, in the totality. So another point we learn from this is that the mind equals the world. As I, my mind is, so is the world. And there's the story of the flower, right? I don't know how many of you remember, but there was this garden where these four people enter, a poet, an artist. I think you have heard the story. Everybody has heard it?
I'll tell it again.
Huh?
Right. So there is a poet, an artist, a botanist, and a lover. And the four of them are friends, and they walk into a garden, and they see this beautiful rose, huge, large, beautiful rose, perfect, you know, beautiful color and fragrance. And that's standing alone. There is no other flower around that somehow. So the artist immediately takes out his easel and starts making a picture and painting it, you know, to capture that beauty of the rose. The poet writes a beautiful poem, "Oh thou rose, how shall thou," and all that, you know, how you make the world more beautiful and all that. The botanist cuts the rose off and pulls off all the petals, and he wants to see where's the stamen and where's the, so he destroys the whole rose to study what the rose is. And that beloved, that lover, he starts crying. So they say, "Why are you crying?" He says, "This rose is making me cry." He said, "Why is this rose making you cry?" He says, "Because 7 years ago, my beloved, I had taken a dozen exactly such roses. And she told me, take the roses back. And she never wanted to see me again. And so that from since those 7 years, every time I see a rose, I start crying." So the rose is the same, but depending on our state of mind, a poet is different, artist is different, a scientist is different, and a beloved. Just as the rain is the same. When it's falling, a person who is happy and love, he says, "Ah, the rains are blessing me, you know, wow." And a person who is miserable, whose girlfriend has left him, he says, you know, I am crying and even the heavens are crying. So the same situation, and you can see that when your mind is fine and happy, everything is good. Even problems come, oh, how's life? Great. And on the other hand, if your mind is disturbed, then no matter how good a meal is in front of you and nothing tastes good, the situations you don't like, you are miserable. So that's why they say work on your mind. But we spend, and we have talked this before in this text also, we spend a lot of time beautifying our exterior, improving our exterior. They say improve, instead of working on the body, work on your mind and intellect and your vasanas, your desires. So there are three important qualities that are mentioned in this particular chapter. Gurudev just mentions one word, but I thought I would talk about it. He mentions three important qualities at the physical level, at the body level, living a life of self-control. At the emotional or mind level, living a life of non-injury. And at the intellectual level, truthfulness. So what do we mean by self-control? People always, the moment you tell them control, we resist. No. Why should I control? I'm here to enjoy. Life is meant to be enjoyed and meant to be eaten and drunk and have fun. That is all okay, but we have five senses, the eyes, ears, nose, skin, and touch. Now, in the Gita, they have five horses, which five horses represent our five senses, which are going out and directing us. And the mind is the reins which control these five horses. And as long as the five horses are controlled by the mind, which is then controlled by the intellect, the driver of the chariot, it's okay. But suppose out of five horses, one horse totally takes off in another direction. No matter how well focused the other four are, the chariot will never move well. So similarly, even one of our sense organs, if it gets too much caught up, you know, think something I want to eat or something I want to see or something I want to hear or touch. So any of our sense organs, when it gets too much in one direction, can take us away. So they say self-control does not mean denial or abstinence. It means living a life of moderation. Why? Because when my mind is focused, when my senses are focused, my mind is focused, that's what they say, a wise person, the moment a temptation comes and he knows or she knows that this is going to take me away from my spiritual path, pulls the senses in, just as a turtle, when it's going and the moment it senses danger, it pulls its limbs under its shell. So similarly, a wise person pulls his senses inward, does not let the mind. So that is called self-control. And non-injury is at all levels, because we can hurt somebody by our action. You can slap somebody or shoot somebody. You can hurt somebody by speech. In fact, speech lasts longer. If you slap somebody or hurt somebody, that can heal. But sometimes a wound inflicted by wrong speech can last for years. You know, 5 years ago she said this to me, I'll never forget. So, and the more you brood on it, the more deeper the hurt gets. And also, the wise people tell us, you can injure people by your thoughts. By negative thinking, you're sending a negative energy to the person, but also it's affecting you negatively. So, injury can be at all levels. And that's what they say, that why, and non-injury is an active process. It's not passive, I won't hurt anybody. But actively helping others, being kind to others, because just as you would not want to be hurt, so not hurting others. And what propels us is the vasanas, is the desire. So they say that your thoughts, when negative thoughts arise, where do they arise from? So they say, where do they arise from? They arise from consciousness. And a person who is in deep coma, or who is in under anesthesia, or who is dead, deep sleep, has no thoughts. Thoughts only arise when I'm conscious, when I'm alive. But good or bad thoughts depend on my vasana. So the thoughts coming out of the consciousness are colored by my vasanas. And so negative and positive thoughts come. Now, how is one to remove vasanas? How is one to eradicate vasanas? So I heard a very good example recently. Because again, you know, good active means compassionate, loving. And so how am I to remove my negative vasana, say I have? How am I to remove it? Because vasanas get nourished by repeated action. So a very beautiful example I heard recently was that, say there is a lamp which is lit and which is burning. Now there are two ways the lamp can be put out. One is a strong gust of wind comes, so strong that the lamp gets put out. Or the second way a lamp can be put out is when the fuel runs out. Say the lamp is burning, there is some oil or there is a candle or some wax. When that finishes, so there are only two ways a lamp can be put out, either by a gust of wind or somebody blowing on it and by running out of fuel. So vasanas are like this lamp which propels our mind and intellect. And suppose there is a negative vasana, how can it be removed? So they say vasana can be removed in two ways, the wrong tendencies. One is by knowledge. So knowledge is like that strong gust of wind that destroys, and they say I no longer should be indulging in it. So that is one, by knowledge, which is like the wind, like the strong gust. Or the second is its fuel should run out. And what fuels the vasanas? Repeated wrong actions. Wrong actions, because wrong actions lead to wrong desires, wrong thoughts, then to vasanas, then vasanas create desires, thoughts, action. So it's a cycle that feeds upon itself. So you run the fuel out. So what is the fuel of vasanas? Wrong actions, wrong ideas, wrong thoughts, wrong desires. And that is what nourishes the vasanas. So remove the fuel that nourishes the vasanas and with right knowledge. So when your vasanas are pure, then your thoughts will be pure. Yesterday somebody asked in the Gita class how to remove negative thoughts. See, there is a very strong negative thought in our mind. How to eradicate, how to remove it. So they say that the first of all, one should recognize that this negative thought has arisen in my mind, whatever the wrong idea is, whether it's anger, hatred, jealousy. So one has to be very alert. And once you are alert and you realize that the wrong thought has arisen, then by not supporting it, by being a witness and watching that this thought has arisen, that's true. But if I brood over that thought and say, you know, yeah, that's true, you know, she said this and she did this, and more, but I say forget and forgive. And then there, whether it's anger or selfishness or greed or jealousy, just be a witness. And as the more you meditate, the calmer your mind becomes. And even when a negative thought arises, you do not nourish the thought, because ultimately it is we as the consciousness that we nourish positive thoughts and negative thoughts. So you can always choose positive thoughts, nourish them. And when a negative thought arises, just watch it. And as a witness, when I am no longer nourishing the thought, then the thought dies down by itself, or at least won't have the power to influence me. So that is what they say. And the third thing is that if my goal is clear, if my goal is higher, then I know that practicing such, you know, anger, negative values, negative tendencies, negative habits takes me down from my goal. So make my goal clear, and once your goal is clear, then there is no problem. And then even in thought we won't hurt anybody. That's what with these saints, because one forgiveness is that, okay, you did wrong to me and I forgive you, you know, that is one. But then higher than that is that even the idea that this person did wrong to me doesn't come. Because there are many ways. One is that God alone is the judge, so why should I judge anybody? Now, or number two is at the level of consciousness. I am the Brahman. I am that consciousness. So this person can only hurt my body, my mind, my intellect, but cannot hurt me. So either way, the idea that I was hurt even should go away. That is true forgiveness. The last value that is mentioned is truthfulness. And truthfulness is, we think of truthfulness as only in speech. You know, he tells the truth. But truthfulness is not only in speech, but is a total integration between what I think, what I speak, and what I do. And what we find that a lot of people think something else and say something else and then do something else. Like, they have all the intentions, you know, I'm going to help you, I'll be there, and then they say that, but when the time comes, they get busy or they get tired or they just don't feel like. And also, not telling the truth is very stressful, you know, because telling the truth is effortless. Then you don't have to remember whom I have told what lie to. Otherwise, I've told this lie to this person and then told another lie to another one and a third one. Then I have to remember to whom I said what and when, and I should. So when I am telling the truth, then my life is effortless. Then I don't have to worry and don't have to think and don't have to. This is the right thing. I said it. I did it. And a total integration. Otherwise, your mind is always split. I should do this. I said I will do this, but I don't do this. So this constant split personality causes a lot of stress in our life and makes our mind disturbed. So if you want your mind peaceful, then just always live a life of truthfulness. What I say, what I think, and what I do should be coherent, should be one. And there should be no difference. So then your mind is very free of stress, free of worry. Otherwise, you are always devious, or you know, this is I should do, but I don't do it, and then your mind is worried because I've done the wrong thing, and if I get found out or if I get caught. So they say that a person who is truthful is predictable. That means people know that what he says he means, that's what he's going to do. Then they do not look for hidden meanings or hidden things. You know, they say yes, this person is straightforward. That is how he is, and that's why straightforwardness. That's why Arjuna in the Gita, the word Arjuna comes from Arjavam, which means straightforwardness. So he was a very straightforward student. He did what he was supposed to do. He was very honest, and that's why he was blessed with this knowledge by the Lord himself. So being truthful means this person is predictable. He does what is right. He does what he's supposed to do. Or she, and practicing this, only can your mind become calm and become quiet, become peaceful. And unless your mind is peaceful, you may have all the wealth of the world. You may have big house, and not that, you know, it's okay, it's good to have all these things, but if my mind is not happy, if my mind is not peaceful, and they say a peaceful mind is a happy mind. You cannot say, my mind is agitated and I am happy. No. Only way you can be happy is if your mind is peaceful. If there is even the slightest disturbance in the mind, no matter how many things are going well, but if one little thing disturbs, then the mind. So the play of mind is fixing the internal with the right knowledge, and living a life of self-control, moderation, not hurting anybody, but active compassion, love, reducing my desires, making my thoughts positive, and living a life which is predictable, effortless, and integrated. And that is how we can make our mind peaceful and quiet, and active love and compassion, not only a see, detachment, people always think as this person doesn't care. The person is detached with his or her own body, mind, and intellect. For others, a wise person or saint has total love. But for herself or himself, there is detachment. So that is how only way to the play of the mind should be a positive effort, not a negative. So these are a few ideas I thought about. The chapter itself is short, so to fill half an hour I had to come up with some ideas. So any questions or any comments? Yeah, sure.
Well, and the whole thing with negative thoughts and speech, I kind of had a realization. I actually see a psychotherapist about, I'm kind of really, really in tune to everyone else's emotions and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And I was really always talking about externals, and I realized, and I came to my realization, it's not really me or whatever, I'm too kind of consumed. So now when I get those thoughts, I'll just tell myself, not mine. And it just stops, because it's really not my problem to be worrying about. Mm-hmm. Or other, and other things I do, because a lot of times we're thinking about the past or the future, and I'll say not, in thought, I'll say not now. And that really quelches some of those things for me. It's been helpful. And then another thing, you know, there are things that can be a little irritating. You know, I just was driving in Los Angeles yesterday, and someone not letting you in, and it's just, you know, and then you go, I start to think, you know, something not kind about that person. Well, it's baffling, because I wouldn't do that. I don't do that. I really don't. It's not like I'm expecting something, you know, different than I would do, but I try to think that wish a blessing on them, because, you know, why else would they do that? So, but I have a long ways to go, but that's just some little things that have, you know, to keep me from the constant thinking. I've, you know, realized this isn't even mine to worry about. It's like not mine, and usually it's not about the present moment. It's not now. So then it's like,
good.
It curbs it.
That's good. These are good, yeah, good ideas, good techniques. It's not mine and not now.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
That's good. Else?
I did get caught up in a situation last week where I was really upset, and I shared it with Shauna. And just being able to share it with somebody helps me to work through it. I mean, rather than just being in your mind and being really upset about it, and also being the observer and watching myself be upset about it. I mean, you get a little schizophrenic of it, but
yeah.
Find that beneficial. I mean, finding somebody that you trust that you can engage with and discuss it and come up with a solution and
true.
Kind of get back on track again. So, I mean, it's not always easy to have those positive thoughts about situations, but I mean, you do get caught up in it. And I guess that's being human. That's the part of it. I'm still working on it.
We all are.
Are
I am too, yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
What do you think about this?
Her
or about it in general, whatever?
Her and in general about everything? Well, I was giving my honest thoughts to her about her situation. And there were several options in her situation that were available. And one of them was to forgive, to let go, and move on. And then there were a lot of other options too. So we worked it, you know, just to go through it.
Good.
I've learned at my stage to be detached.
Right.
Detachment from all these woes that are going on, and there are in my life quite a few that are going on. And just keep it at distance, observe, and keep myself centered.
Good. That's very good. Talking about sharing, they say that when you share joy with somebody else, it doubles. And when you share sorrow with somebody, it halves. See, sharing joy doubles the joy. But when you share sorrow with somebody, not to make that person sorrowful, but to get that person, it actually halves your sorrow. So if that other person is wise, not the other person should also start crying with you.
Right.
But if the other person is able to take it, then actually it's yeah.
She did, thank you.
Yeah, good.
I find with women, I think we like to share with our, you know, close friend, not friends, but friend. You know, you can't share everything with everybody. So, you know, one close friend you share, and it helps you emotionally, it helps you. And then at the end of it, the conversation end up, oh, you know what, it's just one those time. You know, it's okay, it's just temporary. You know, it'll be fine. Tomorrow should be okay. You know, that's how the conversation ends. And you get, you feel that, you feel good about it, that you have air out. You feel, it's not that bad. You know, silly, I was getting upset for no reason. I now, everything what I find that, you know, my boys are old, they are, I let them get on with their life, let them, it's okay if they haven't called me, if, you know, if, it's fine. But, you know, now they've grown up and they have their life. But in the beginning, oh, you know, he hasn't called me, you know, and now, honestly, I'm saying, you know, it's okay. And my son will always say, Mom, I'm going to call you, blah, 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 such and such. You know, I'll call you tomorrow or day after. I'll call you, Mom, okay? It's fine if there's something you call me, but I don't. And there's some things I have to do when they come home, when my son comes home, he is still single, he comes and of course he wants Mom to go cook. And sometimes I don't want to cook food, but then I say, you know what, this is my duty, and that's what makes my son happy and makes me feel good. And I cook with a smile instead of feeling miserable. I just say, no, if you are not happy, if you don't cook food or cooking anything, but without love, not in devotion, the food is not going to taste good. And so I have that. I make sure that I'm praying. I just say, this is the best food I'm going to cook for him when he's coming home. And, you know, and everything worked out fine. I leave everything. This is just temporary. He's not going to be coming home so often when he gets married. And so everything just temporary. It's not going to last forever. Leave everything temporary. This heat, oh my God, it's so hot. And everybody, no, it's just temporary and it's fine. We'll have a fall and then we'll have a winter. You know, that's how I laugh about it.
Good.
That's how I take things now that way instead of worrying about it. I know the things break, but.
Good. Thank you, everybody, for